Good morning.
So last night we all got some rest, I hope, and I was resting, and as that happens frequently for me, I woke up in the night and a song was playing on the jukebox. And the song was by Leonard Cohen, and it was "There Ain't No Cure for Love." There ain't no cure, there ain't no cure, there ain't no cure for love. And I thought, that's right. That's true. We can't help loving what we love. And, you know, it's not necessarily convenient to love things. It's not necessarily easy to love things. It's not necessarily easy to love people. It's not necessarily easy to love lots of things. But when you love something, there just ain't no cure for it. You have to take care of it. And you want to take care of it. Whatever resistance you have is overcome by your need to take care of the thing you love. Or the person you love. Or the animal you love. So I think this goes also for the Buddha Dharma. Buddha Dharma gives us some difficulty, but we love it. And we want to take care of it. We want to study it. We want to know about it. We love the Buddha Dharma, and we want to hear about the Buddha Dharma. And we're even willing to hear about the same things over and over and over again. And that's how it is with something you love, right? You see the person or the thing or the pet every day, but every day you love it again. And that's just the way love is. So this session, we're talking about a teaching we love called the teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And today, I'm talking about third foundation of mindfulness, which is mindfulness, mindful observation of the mind in the mind. Mindful observation of the mind in the mind. And we've been up to a lot of that, haven't we? In these last some days, we've been doing quite a bit of observation of the mind in the mind. Well, what's going on in this mind, in the mind? Of course, we're, I hope, having some enjoyment of this mind in the mind, some feeling of calm, some feeling of ease, some feeling of non-distraction, and more power in our practice to, when we are distracted, to quickly notice that and come back to enjoying the samadhi. So we're doing quite a bit of observation of the mind in the mind. In the sutra, it's quite interesting. What is brought up at first is, you could say, are obstructions to observing the mind in the mind, or obstructions to ease and peace and relaxing and centering and non-distraction. So there's some obstructions that are brought up first when the sutra discusses this, and the obstructions are very familiar to us. They're the three poisonous minds of greed, hate, and delusion. And the sutra puts it this way: how does a person of the way remain established in the observation of the mind, in the mind, when his mind is desiring? The person of the way is aware, my mind is desiring. When his mind is not desiring, he is aware, my mind is not desiring. When his mind is hating something, he is aware, my mind is hating. When his mind is not hating, he is aware, my mind is not hating. When his mind is in a state of ignorance, he is aware, my mind is in a state of ignorance. When his mind is not in a state of ignorance, he is aware, my mind is not in a state of ignorance. So as you know, Doralee and I did not coordinate our talks. We just divided up this topic, and we were just talking. And of course, what we're saying is going to overlap naturally. And so, as Doralee said, mindfulness is one of the Eightfold Path, and it is, so it's 1/8 of what we call an appropriate response to suffering and the cause of suffering. So it's one of the eight factors, one of the eight steps, if you will, on a path. One of those steps on the path to responding to suffering and the cause of suffering. And what is the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering is Trishna. That's the Sanskrit word. It means thirst, literally thirst. So it's also glossed in English as desire, as it is here, or greed, or also grasping. And in Buddhist teaching, the three poisonous minds are associated with three kinds of craving or three kinds of desire. So greed usually comes first in the list. Greed is associated with a craving for sense pleasure. And the idea frequently espoused everywhere you look is that the more sense pleasure you can get, the more happy you will be. The more sense pleasure you can get, the more happy you can be, and oftentimes this is promoted as, you know, getting more sense pleasure is promoted as the thing to do in life. This is, want just something to do in life? Go out and get a lot of sense pleasure. this will make you happy. So, but Buddha's teaching says, oh, not so fast. Not so fast. That kind of craving can never really be satisfied and never really lead to true happiness. So delusion is associated with another kind of craving, and that is the craving for existence. So delusion is a craving for existence, and it is based on the belief, delusion is centered around the belief that things are permanent, pleasurable, and have some sort of abiding identity. In other words, material phenomena are real. We should, they're existing. They're really existing as we see them, not impermanent. And as we know, the three marks of existence for Buddhism is impermanent, without a self. And what's the third one?
Suffering.
Suffering. It's suffering. So delusion is basically not seeing things according to the way we see them, or according to the way Buddha saw them in his awakening. And finally, hatred is the craving for non-existence and the belief that suffering can be masked or by rejecting unpleasurable experience will lead to happiness. If we just get rid of the things we don't like and the people we don't like, that will lead to happiness. And at the extreme, it's based on the belief that the end of life will be the end of suffering. The end of life will be the end of suffering. And so we see a lot of this in the world too. We see quite a bit of this right now in our world. If we could just get rid of these people, we would be happy. How could we believe such a thing? How could we believe that destroying the lives of people would be a way toward happiness? Because that's what's underlying that hatred. When you really sit with that, it's hard to. I think it's hard to take in. I think we have to mask that understanding a little bit just to keep sane. So greed, hate, and delusion are brought up. Why are they brought up? They're brought up because they're inappropriate and unworkable responses to suffering. They do not work. They will not relieve suffering. So, let's be mindful of them. Let's be mindful. We're all subject to these conditions of mind. I don't think the Buddha would have brought this up if he didn't see that human beings and he himself were subject to these conditions of mind. But his insight was, these are inappropriate and unworkable responses to suffering. So, let's be careful. Let's be awake to their arising in us, first of all. And then, if we see these conditions arising in our world, to think about what kind of a response, what kind of an appropriate response could we have to those, to observing the arising of greed, hate, and delusion. So, the implication of what Dorothy was talking about, and I don't know if she said it in just this many words, but it was right there, was that, you know, greed is just overdoing. There is pleasurable experience, right? We have pleasurable experience. Greed is overdoing pleasurable experience. Hatred is overdoing unpleasurable experience or reacting to unpleasurable experience. And delusion is not knowing how you feel one way or the other and then being confused by that. So our practice in this sitting meditation is to sit still in the midst of arising of pleasurable experience, unpleasurable experience, or I don't know what kind of experience this is. I just don't know. This is the way to have mindful observation of pleasurable and unpleasurable and indeterminate experience. And this is our practice. And when we do this practice, we can avoid, or we can be awake to, maybe avoid is the wrong word. We can be awake to those times when our perception of pleasurable experience crosses over into greed. What is the boundary? We're interested in, you know, knowing the boundary. It's like, when we're awake to the attractiveness of pleasurable experience, and there's a second piece of pie on the table, you can say, yes, that was pleasurable. It was certainly a pleasurable but the boundary might be that boundary, that second piece of pie might be the boundary for that continuing to be a pleasurable experience. So we say, no, thank you. I won't have that second piece of pie. So we're awake to having pleasurable experience and knowing when that's enough, pleasurable experience. We're awake to having unpleasurable experience. And stopping at the boundary, or being aware of the boundary, or when just to be able to say, this is an unpleasurable experience, that's enough. And please acknowledge that all you want. Acknowledge all the unpleasurable experiences. It's important, actually. It's part of our mindfulness to acknowledge the unpleasurable experiences as unpleasurable experiences. But that's it. We don't have to go any farther with that. Then that crosses some red line, if you will. And then and the Buddha's teaching contemplates that we do cross the red line. Because when it says, when his mind is hating, he's aware. His mind is hating. So we cross the boundary and we see, my mind is hating. Just that insight, just that observation is helpful and can pull us back a little bit. So I was thinking about how to talk about neutral experience, and when I was thinking about it, another song came up. And this song is by the Rolling Stones. And interestingly, this song is called Satisfaction. But this song, even though it's called Satisfaction, it's about no satisfaction. That's what the song is about. And it has this line. When I'm watching my TV and a man comes on and tells me how white my shirt should be, and he can't be a man if he doesn't smoke the same cigarettes as me. And I thought, that's a good way to talk about neutral experience. We're having a perfectly good neutral experience. We like our white shirt just like it is. And then somebody comes along and says, your white shirt isn't white enough. You need to whiten up that white shirt. And then suddenly we're confused about our white shirt. Now we're confused. My white shirt isn't white enough. Just be able to have a neutral experience about things and let a white shirt just be white. Let a black shirt just be black. Just be like it is. Let our experience be like it is. Be awake to our experience like it is. Just as it is. And being able to call it pleasurable, okay, thank you. Unpleasurable, not so keen, but I'm noticing it. And I'm noticing not so keen. Yeah, that's a point. So hopefully, here we are in the sixth day of Sesshin, and maybe we're in the sixth month of our practice, or maybe we're in the sixth year of our practice, or maybe we're in the sixth decade of our practice. And throughout this period of time that we've been practicing, hopefully we have noticed that we have a tendency to experience something and say, this experience shouldn't be happening right now. This experience, I'm having this experience, but it shouldn't be happening. So this is one of the things we observe when we observe the observation of the mind in the mind. We observe this tendency to have some experience and think it's the wrong experience. So now, in the sesshin, if we see some kind of experience like that, some kind of attitude like that toward our experience, then hopefully we now notice that, and there's power in noticing that. There's power in noticing that experience we're having right now, we don't think should be happening, and noticing that it creates a power in our practice. That is the power of our practice. And when I'm sitting, sometimes I think, why can't I go a little deeper? Why can't I quiet down a little more? Why can't I calm down a little more? Why can't I be a little bit more centered? And we have to notice that when we're egging ourselves on in some way. I don't think that's useful. I don't think it's useful to egg ourselves on. We're just having the mind that we have. We're doing our best, you know. Some of us have had wrong view training in our lives. We were taught to think we should be different than we are. Other people should be different than they are. And our job in life is to correct them. And correct ourselves and get them on the right track and get ourselves on the right track and shape up. And I've got a painting that was given to me after I was head student. It was by a monk, a priest named Daigon Luke. And I gave a talk in the sesshin, or the not the sesshin, but in the practice period, to the assembly. And afterwards, he gave me this painting, and it's a picture of a heart. And anyway, in the talk I gave, there was a blue jay figured in the talk, and so. On the talk, I think there was a painting. He recycled this painting it was a painting that said, it was the heart, and then it said, get on with it, get over it, get, you know, in other words, it's like bossy phrases, get on with it, get over it, shape up, you know, do right, be better than you are, you know. Those kinds of phrases were like written vertically on the heart. Anyway, and then he put the blue jay. I think the blue jay came for me. I think the painting was like that, but then the blue jay came for me because of my talk. And he put the blue jay on there, kind of this strong, you know, figure saying, no. I don't agree. I don't buy it. I don't cave in to those messages. I don't take those to heart. Anyway, the sutra. I think I should go back to the sutra. The sutra starts out in this kind of way that I've been talking. In a way, these obstructions, right? These obstructions, and I've kind of been just talking about the obstructions to our practice. And and that's the way the sutra starts out. There's some instructions, and it has a couple more obstructions, and then it starts. It's like our meditation, and you listen to it, and it's just like our meditation. It's like the evolution of our meditation. The sutra says, when the practitioner's mind is tense, he is aware, my mind is tense. When his mind is not tense, he is aware, my mind is not tense. When his mind is distracted, he is aware, my mind is not distracted. When his mind is not distracted, he is aware. Oh, sorry, I messed that up. When his mind is distracted, he is aware his mind is distracted. When his mind is not distracted, he is aware my mind is not distracted. When his mind has a wider scope, he is aware my mind has widened in scope. When her mind has a narrow scope, she is aware my mind has become narrow in scope. When her mind is capable of reaching a higher street, she is aware my mind is capable of reaching a higher state. When her mind is not capable of reaching a higher state, she is aware my mind is not capable of reaching a higher state. When his mind is composed, he is aware my mind is composed. When his mind is not composed, he is aware my mind is not composed. When his mind is free, he is aware my mind is free. When his mind is not free, he is aware my mind is not free. So it seemed to me that when I was reading this, that the sutra kind of moved from a little bit from conditions that bind and constrict the mind to conditions of mind like that open and expand the scope of the mind, considering these. You know that there's conditions that bind and constrict the mind, and that there are conditions that open and unbind and free the mind. There are those and that is kind of the movement. That is the movement of our practice. I feel many times when we sit down in a condition of some being constricted, being constrained, being bound, and through studying those conditions of mind, our mind becomes wider in scope, becomes capable, possibly, reaching a higher state. But still, basic practice is, if his mind is not capable of reaching a higher state, he's just aware that my mind is not capable of reaching a higher state. And that's it. That's the experience that the practitioner is having. The experience that the practitioner is having is the experience to pay attention to, not to some wished for experience. Only by focusing on the experience that the practitioner is having can we rest and be at ease and be of comfort to ourselves. And only that way can we realize love. Only that way can we realize love. We let ourselves be as we are. We let other people be as they are. And when we do that, and we can thoroughly do that, if we can ever do that, we can love. If we can ever do that, we can love. There's some more here on the page, but I think that's enough. Would you like to have any questions, or I don't know if the microphones came out this time or not?
Can I just talk loud?
Yeah,
prefer to have people
when you can.
Hey. Where is the boss?
You can do whatever you want.
I think it's a song. So,
maybe you can just talk loud.
You could try talking loud. Oh, there you go.
Hello.
Okay.
So when you say we're doing our best, part of me is, I told my wife this morning, I'm trying not to be a rice bag. Isn't that the phrase Dogen used for monks who were taking advantage of the rice of the monastery and not working hard?
Mm-hmm.
She said, do you mean a douchebag? And I'm trying not to be either of those. And especially trying hard, right? And so when you say, we're doing our best, I'm trying to do my best, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's that effort. So it's kind of a fine line for me, and I wonder how you feel about that, between not being okay with daydreaming, for instance, working hard on letting go of objects of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, being okay with certainly noticing that is part of it, right? But anyway, maybe you understand my question.
Yeah, I do. And I understand that you're working hard, and I think that you're not expecting a particular result of working hard.
course not. I have no expectations.
And then if you see, and then if you see that you're expecting a particular result from your exertions, and you know the teaching is not to expect a particular result, then you don't get down on yourself for having expected a particular result. So this is the dance, right? This is the dance of practice. This is, you know, we're not, you know, this isn't a certain enterprise. This is a constantly shifting rice bag. I mean, we're just working with all of these factors, trying to make an effort, and you know, and then studying, trying, and one of the things that sometimes I use, I don't know, this might be helpful, is I imagine. I use my imagination, and I imagine that I am sitting in the midst of Buddha's samadhi. This is Buddha's samadhi. Buddha had the same kinds of experiences I did, I am having. But anyway, I try to remember that it isn't my meditation. It isn't my meditation. It's Buddha's meditation. And I'm sitting in the midst of Buddha's meditation. This is important to me. I'm sitting in the midst of Buddha's meditation. And it's imperfect. It's definitely imperfect, but I imagine that's what's going on, and it's perfect. Sometimes, you know, the sutra. One of the things that I appreciated about the sutra, this was in my written notes here, is that it's always saying when his mind is distracted, when his mind has a wider scope, when his mind it could reach a higher state, when it's always when, it's always at this moment, it's always what's happening right now at this moment, when we're time beings, we're coursing in time. And I think this is important to remember too. Our minds are not fixed. Our minds are never going, you know, this idea that we will be undistracted, single-pointed, and never waver. It certainly can happen. There's a win to that. There's a win. There's a win to undistracted, one-pointed mind. But it's a win. It's not a fixed state. It's not going to stay. You know, it's like, you know, it's not going to be here always. And that is the truth of the Tathagata's teaching. That's the truth of the Tathagata's teaching. We're experiencing the mind that Buddha experienced. This is important, I think.
Thank you.
Shalima has a question. Kokai.
Okay.
Did you make it?
Hello?
Yeah, it works.
Thank you.
Oh, now, hold it closer.
Thank you.
Oh, now it's not working.
Hello.
Yeah.
It's all a mystery. And when you speak of the when, I was reminded of the book, Becoming Ourselves. And when, I think Drew, is that his name? When, so I bought the book and I said, oh gee, would you autograph my book for me? And he said, oh sure. And he wrote, it's all included, or everything is included. And there's a part of me in practice where if I lean on that part that knows I want to practice, there's a part of me that knows I want to practice. If I weigh on that side, I feel okay. But then there's this thing where other things gets in the way. I think like preferences or edges gets in the way, or I'm not good enough gets in the way, or maybe if I sit longer, all these things that gets in the way. And maybe that's just like riding a horse that you've never been, that's like me riding a horse that I've never been on, or riding the waves. But for me, it's also part of just trusting that it'll be okay. So it's scary. There's that part that's kind of like, am I doing the right thing? So there it is again. Am I doing the right thing? And I don't know if that's the mind within the mind or just the observation of being in the world. So that's kind of like how it lands with me. How, what's the it? That's how it seems to me. So I don't know. So I just put that out. But that's what, when you said the when, I thought about becoming ourselves.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good.
Dogen says, those who practice the way seek to be immersed in the way. Seek to be immersed in the way. So, you know, if you're struggling, you know, even if you're struggling, that's immersed in the way. Because a person of, there is some struggle for a person in the way. Isn't like easy, this is an easy street. This isn't, if you want easy, well, I don't know, move to Tahiti or something, I don't know. But this is not just the easy way, but this is the immersed way, and we're immersed in the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Thank you, Jim. I have two comments on your talk. The first one was like early on when you were talking about the states of mind, when one notices one's mind is hating, one hates, when they notice their ignorance, they notice I'm ignorant. When they're not ignorant, I would say they are mistaken.
Yeah, right.
And the other one was when you were referring to the song Satisfaction and its message. And I was struck by the pernicious nature of that type of communication that we're bombarded with constantly, because it creates the notion that there's something wrong with you because you're not like me, and that it stinks to far more than the type of cigarettes you smoke. And I think it's really one of the more disturbing trends in society.
Thank you. Leah has a question. Yes, Mary.
Just very briefly, at least you have
in your jukebox songs from like Leonard Cohen and admirable artists and Rolling Stones, but for whatever reason, I think I sat two periods with Boy George in my head. comma, chameleon. Yeah, so, you know.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you for that earworm.
Can I sing something?
Luckily, I don't know that.
Oh, yeah, you are lucky.
Well, that's all it is.
I would like to say that your talk was exceptional. I mean, really. And I thought to myself, I shouldn't ruin it by even saying anything in the Q&A, but I can't help myself.
We've noticed that.
Yeah. But when you talk about mind, this is there's the Dharma talk and then the learning from our sitting. And I just sat this morning and it occurred to me that when you talk about mind, being mindful of mind, each one of us, as we were sitting, there was something in our mind, and your talk spoke to that. But I just was noticing the complete utter silence of the room. This was not my mind. It was not anybody else. We all have our little minds, but the room today was just saturated with beautiful silence. So that's us too, I think. Anyway, and maybe, you know, when we want to be other than we are in the moment, if we can just remember that room, maybe of some help. Anyway, thank you.
You know, there's an idea of a, you know, collective mind or something like that, and you know, it's something that's, again, something that we can imagine. You know, we can imagine that there's a collective mind, and sometimes we really feel, man, I think I'm really participating in a collective mind here, and that's kind of pretty. That's a pretty awesome feeling, you know. If there seems to be an arising of a collective mind, I'm not saying that one arose here, but I don't know if it did or not. But I was talking and you were listening, it's certainly an imagination. It's a happy imagination. It's a wholesome imagination, I think, that there's a collective mind at times that really can be felt, and you feel like you're participating in it, and that's, you know, I think we've all had that experience. So, yeah, thank you. Yes. I think Malia might have been next, and then Alexi. You have to press the make. If it's green, it's on. If it's not green, it's dead.
Just a thought about collective mind. But this is not what I was going to say. But I was at a James Taylor concert in Boston in the summer, and all of a sudden his microphone failed mid-song. And so it went silent, or the whole system failed, and so it was silent, and we were in an auditorium. And then the audience just continued singing the whole song for another 3 or 4 minutes. Everybody knew the words, and it was definitely a collective, and he was crying by the end. Mm-hmm. And it was collective mind at that moment, I think. Yeah, it was really beautiful. But what I was going to say was that, like, my mind's bouncing. There's so much happening with my family right now that my mind is skittering everywhere. And so as I'm sitting, I feel like you're a little bluebird. It'll land for a moment and it'll settle, and then it's off again scaring on another issue or plan or problem or whatever. So I really appreciate that we're just having the mind that we have, just like accepting that, and then saying kind of, it's all included. And that kind of, is as I heard, it's all included, I felt just this enormous sense of expansiveness sitting here, that all of this is all part of it. It's not, I have to find the real bits. Just knowing it's all included made me feel so expansive, and and also the fact that it's scary, like, you know, accepting that into the, accepting the scary rather than kind of trying to duck from it or fix it or something also helps me to feel very, that it's all included. And I was just going to say that all of that kind of resonates with me with our morning chant, where we say, entering the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. I think of that as the same experience to me, kind of just everything is there and it's all merciful. That's all.
Thank you. You know, I think, you know, just to comment a little bit that you know, our practice isn't the same as you know, monks in a monastery. We're workers in the world. I mean, I have priest robes on here, but I'm a lay person, right? I mean, I'm a lay priest. I'm not a monastic. In other words, there's a distinction there. And so, yes, I'm a priest, but I'm a lay priest or a non-monastic priest. And so all of us are that way in this sangha. That's what this sangha is. We're workers in the world, and we're taking care of things in the world, and that is a part of our practice. And yeah, thank you. Include that, because you know we can't go along with ideas of like, well, if I can only get off to the monastery. Some people have been able to get off to the monastery, and that's wonderful. And when you get off to the monastery, it's lovely and it's a wonderful adjunct to your practice. But when we come back, you know, we're workers in the world, and we are taking care of myriad, you know, things, and our hard work is to include that, all of that. That's hard work. It's just as hard as the work that the people are doing in the monastery, and they're doing hard work too.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Very insightful. One comment I wanted to make is about pleasurable and unpleasurable experiences. I think there's some unpleasurable experiences that mask themselves as pleasurable. Like, for example, I like getting angry. You know, it's not good for me. It drains my energy, burns me on the inside. But until very recently, I would read news every day, and I would love to just going through it, just in the moment, it feels somehow good, but later on, not so much. And I thought maybe it works the opposite way, so maybe there's some unpleasurable experience that, the pleasurable has masked themselves, so the unpleasurable that seem that maybe they don't feel good in the moment, but later on it's like a bitter pill that cured us. That's just something I wanted to remark.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, thank you for bringing up about anger, because one of the things about, it's so true, that one of the things about anger is when you're angry and you're really totally devoted to anger, it feels like completely right. It feels like this is the truth, and now I'm really got it. You know, I'm really, and it's satisfying in that way. You know, that's the masking that you're talking about. I think that this feeling that there's some satisfaction in being completely angry. And maybe in a weird way there is, but then as you say, afterwards, and when it cools off, it feels completely wrong, right? It feels like, oh, that was so off. That wasn't helpful. No, that didn't help anybody. It didn't help me. It's embarrassing that I acted that way or spoke that way. And yet, in the moment, it had felt so righteous and good. So we can do that a number of times, and then we learn about it. I think that's the thing. We do learn about it, and we learn that it is a false flag. You know, anger is holding up this false flag of righteousness, and it's not. Thank you for that insight. What time is noon service?
Right now.
Right now.
Right
now.
In 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes. Okay, I'm sorry, but if there's one more question, it will be the last.
I just wanted to say that I have found mindfulness practice to be very useful over the last while for myself. I've had a lot of emotional turmoil, and knowing that it is mind, and knowing that there is conflicting and negative things coming up, our mind has been extremely useful in dealing with it and being able to function well and day-to-day basis. And I also found that, you know, we can't always get what we want. And if we try some fun time, we just might find we get what we need.
Well, somebody once said that all you can find all the Dharma that there ever was and ever will be in popular song. So I think we've done that this morning. And thank you very much, everyone.